All right, friends. Sam Rogowski here, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. All right. We can lower the music now. We're good. Let me explain first. We've left the bubble. The show is on the road. We are coming to you not from an undisclosed location, but rather from the KABC studios tonight, where we've been following the election returns in Alabama. I'll talk about those in just a few minutes. Wow. I'll tell you, regardless of what the returns are doing, boy, is this a charged race. And an observation I have is, think of all of these special elections, right? You know what these special – every time a new president comes in and they pick political people to fill appointed positions inside the administration. Some of those political people obviously hold office, and those office vacancies then need to be filled. And every single one of these races has been turned into this proxy battle on Trump, has become a referendum on Trump. And everybody in the political blogosphere and blabosphere has been parsing these elections out, trying to figure out what does this mean for the public's perception of the presidency and Trump's likelihood of succeeding for a second term. Right? That's what everybody wants to know. And I think this type of approach to these races is totally wrong. And it's wrong because these races in many respects, in some respects are local. And in other respects, it has to do with a political problem that is far broader than Trump. This election in Alabama, for example, that's part Trump agenda, but the other part is it is a protest vote against politics as usual, and especially in the Senate. Alabama is a Republican state. You're not going to do anything about that. It's a Republican state. But these are not your woke Republicans. These are not your Republicans that want to make their party more mainstream, more like the Democratic Party, more California, New York, and less Alabama. This is the critical thing to remember. So my perception, imagination of your average Alabama Republican who voted today, they do not like Mitch McConnell. This race, in some respects, was more about Mitch McConnell than it was about Trump. And the pundits that I've been watching, and there are, and I see it right now live, CNN's got the map up. You know, they've got the map up and the percentages. And they're showing, I want you to know, absolutely all night, CNN is showing numbers on this race that do not reflect exactly the reality. They've been off. Now, the race, I'm just looking at it right now. On the New York Times election 2017, the race is tightened up. It is now, as of right this second, it is 0.4% apart. It is a hair apart favoring Roy Moore. But what's been, you know, and they've got this needle. You remember the needle on the New York Times page where it predicts who's going to win? They predict that this race is going to go to Jones. How many report? Okay, we've got, let's see, it's a little tricky to see on the screen. 85% reporting. Precinct's report. It is tight. This race is close. There is no question about it. Anyway, we'll follow it over the course of tonight. And I think by the end of the program here, we should know exactly what came down. I'll explain what it means and how this will play out. If it's close enough, there is also a good chance that we won't necessarily know tonight. What it is, you know, that you have races that are this close, you sometimes get into recounts and that type of thing. But that does not mean that there isn't a conversation to be had, especially about the conversation that is being had in the news media about this, which I think is an important part of the story. Okay. How does the state of – I'm looking at the breakdown of these various counties that are reporting. A lot of blue, but they're in the urban centers. So this is normal. This is kind of like California. By the way, California, if we weren't a state of urban centered, as if we were just voting in the rural areas, we would be much more of a red state than a blue state. So this is a breakdown that comes across that isn't just unique to Alabama. So all right, so let's see if there's been an update. Yeah, very close. It's gone up a little bit for him. It's just now you see what's happening. It's up and down by a hair as these precincts, individual voting places report their full results. The most interesting thing to me, in spite of this tremendous headwind against Moore, in spite of the fact that he ran an absolutely undisciplined campaign. You remember he disappeared? I think there's some rumor that actually over the weekend he left the state. He left the state to go to the Army-Navy game? This is craziness. You're fighting what ought to be for your political life, and you leave. To me, I think that it's actually far more disturbing than any other of the allegations, is because that's something concrete. That's something that I can see. That's something that I can evaluate. Would you hire somebody for a job who, in the middle of a very important battle, decides to check out and go on vacation? Probably not. So if you're looking to hire a guy for a political job, that's crucial. All right. With all this going on, still interesting to me, I heard a very interesting thing today, earlier today. I was talking to a friend who is in Washington, D.C. right now. And he's meeting with some people, some union people there. And the fascinating thing is that the unions are starting to realize that the Democrats are no longer their friends. And this is something I've wanted to talk about. Forever, right? The union labor has been lockstep with the Democratic Party. And by the way, a big financial supporter of the Democratic Party. As for my entire life, I know that we have the expectation has been that when it comes to the Teamsters, when it comes to the longshoremen, and all these organizations, that they are absolutely one with the Democrats, because the Democrats have been, at least theoretically, right, the party that supports labor, the party that supports the little guy, blue collar workers. And slowly, what's happened over time is these blue collar workers get crapped on, have gotten the short end of the stick by all these policies, globalism, opening the borders, allowing mass illegal immigration, unchecked, unfettered free trade agreements. And these are, by the way, policies authored by the Democratic Party. And it's in this era of Trump, oddly enough, that these unions are beginning to reevaluate it, because they're realizing that Trump is right on TPP, that Trump is right in his approach to immigration, that Trump is right in a lot of his economic policies. They see that his economic policies are more likely to favor their union members than those of the Democrats. And this is all important. This all plays out here because the political landscape is shifting. And you've got – so I'm watching the CNN reporter, and they're talking about Moore and all the things that he's supposedly done. And they're talking about Trump and how his tweeting and his things that he's saying and how it's just so unpalatable. But the fact of the matter is that the Democratic Party has built its franchise on the backs of blue collar labor, on the political support of blue collar professionals, on the support of middle income Americans, And I look at this, I look at all this, you know, the stuff going on, swirling around politics and all of these tweets and evaluations of how many Diet Cokes Trump drinks and how many times he goes to McDonald's. And the you know, yesterday CNN reporting that there are only four major food groups, you know, on Trump Force One during the campaign. It was McDonald's and KFC and, you know, other fast food chains. And I'm looking at this and I'm realizing, you know, none of these things that are being reported as offensive, as terrible, as you know, prejudicial, derogatory about Trump are in the least way offensive, derogatory, or otherwise disqualifying to these middle Americans. These people, I'm just letting you know, this is 100% something people are listening to this and going, that doesn't bother me. I'm not least bit bothered by that. And they care ultimately about the issues. And the issues at the end of the day for most people, it's about money. It's about if they've got a job. And right now, the wind in the Trump movement sails is a roaring economy. And jobs are coming back. And they're not all Silicon Valley high-end tech jobs. They're entry-level jobs, low-tech jobs, building jobs, blue-collar jobs. And they're coming back. Factories are being built. And this type of economic activity is very powerful. And so it overcomes potentially, you know, it overcomes a lot of things like, you know, the obsession with what happened 35 years ago in Roy Moore and at the Fair Oaks County Mall or whatever that place was called. It just becomes less important because people in Alabama care. Obviously, I mean, they're voting for a guy like Moore who, again, I think the bigger problem with him is he's kind of an undisciplined loon. But they're willing to go for it because what they do not want any more of are politics as usual. They do not want Democrats or even establishment party Republicans being further empowered to have any more say in their lives than they already do. So let's see what the update is. It's tight. It's basically a neck and neck race. That's where we're at right now. We have 85% reporting. One fascinating thing here is everybody said that this could be an election that could be turned by write-ins. Now, granted, the write-ins are a percentage that could tip the race in the sense that if they're write-ins, they're probably write-ins that are lost votes for Roy Moore. But there are only 16,700 write-ins so far in the race with 85% reporting. So the interesting thing about that is, I mean, it wasn't like a huge movement of people went for a write-in candidate. It accounts to almost 2% of the vote, right? So that could be a significant margin. It could end up resulting in a loss for Moore. But it's not the type of movement that was predicted, and probably because nobody coalesced behind a single candidate. There wasn't a single candidate that emerged that had the support of the party or anyone else for that matter. Well, one other interesting thing I'm going to say here. You guys familiar with what betting odds are? You remember betting odds are usually, I'm not going to say more predictive than more predictive than polls, but the betting odds here had more far and away ahead. And then what was very interesting is about 5 o'clock when the polls closed and the first results rolled in, there was almost a 180 degree swing to Jones, because the initial results that came through had Jones leading something like 60-40 with 1-3% of the vote in. And the interesting thing, that was the time to make the money. You should have turned around, bet your money there, and then waited, because then it swung back around. Do we have an update right now, Robbie, of what it is? Right. That's fascinating. So right now it's 88% Jones for the win. So the betting people who are putting real money on this are tilting the race towards Jones. Very interesting stuff. All right. Well, I don't know. I don't know if this thing's going to get figured out tonight. It may. It may here in the next. It may here in the next few minutes. But again, it's within 0.2% right now, according to CNN. Did you see that Roy Moore came on a horse to vote? Him and his wife literally rode in on a horse. And you would think that this could have won huge points with the libs out there because, well, I mean, people care about the environment. And I actually think probably riding a horse is more environmentally friendly than a Prius. It's green technology. Well, he did. He actually showed up on a horse. He said it's a family tradition. It's something that he does. Everything this guy has done has just been loony. It is loony from top to bottom. But but again, this is Alabama, and it sells. And to some extent, it's perceived to be authentic. One interesting thing here is there was a gender split, a predicted gender split, but there also was an age split among voters. That according to exit polls, it was older voters that went for Moore, and younger voters favored Jones. And the split happened somewhere around the 55 mark. So if you're over 55, you were favoring Jones, favoring Moore, excuse me, and then under 55, you're favoring Moore, Jones, excuse me. I got it wrong. Over 55, favoring Moore, Jones, less than that. There we go. Got it. All right. Let's see here. Let's take a quick break. Following the race here, we're live in studio giving you all the latest breaking developments. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio
7790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. The number here at the studios, if you'd like to reach us, 800-222-5222. Sam at samnation.com is my email. We're following the Alabama special election very, very close. Right now, the New York Times has Doug Jones ahead by a hair. It's been a too close to call race. One thing to note that anything within half a percent by Alabama law, anything by half a percent percentage, there's an automatic recount that's triggered. So we may have some idea of how this goes tonight, but not necessarily a final result. There is a very interesting development. I saw this piece yesterday in the Politico. And I say Politico because it's especially important that this piece was there. And it had to – the title of the piece was Why the Me Too Movement Should Be Ready for a Backlash. Now, isn't this fascinating, right? The Me Too movement being the this whole world of coming up with allegations that have happened. Women, men in many cases, that have had unwanted sexual harassment perpetrated upon them and who have come out of the shadows to report these incidents publicly. And by the way, this is a relatively new phenomenon and one that certainly swept up this Alabama race, right? You had women come forward who had years ago purportedly been the victims of come-ons and even in some cases attempted assaults by the Republican running for the Senate seat there, Roy Moore. So this has been part of our dialogue, but only for, I was thinking about this, about 2 months. Is that how long this Me Too movement's been? Harvey Weinstein was the big breakthrough. You know, we have Harvey Weinstein, shocking but not shocking allegations to anybody that, you know, was on the inside, knew what was going on. But anyway, Harvey Weinstein and then a slew of prominent men accused and basically, you know, many of them run out of town. And now there is already I'm so soon, right? So soon a Politico piece starts to opine that maybe there's going to be a backlash to this. And in reading the piece, you want to know why there's a backlash to it now, why they're talking about this maybe that maybe we've been too hasty. It's all because of Franken. I mean, it's the piece doesn't come out exactly explicitly to say it, but they devote, the writer, she devotes a tremendous amount of it to Franken. And I'll tell you, when I saw, going back to Franken resigning, you remember what he said? He didn't, he was very feisty. Said, this really isn't, you know, some of these things didn't happen. Some of these things that are alleged, I remember very differently. And then said, I'm going to be, you know, in the coming weeks, I'm going to be resigning my position. And I remember hearing, and I thought, you know, the left isn't going to like this. They're going to be very uncomfortable with this, and they will begin to spin this as the first victim of a movement that has maybe gone too far, which I've said all along. Where's the due process? And when this happened, when I saw Franken resign, my first reaction, I shared it with you, was this is he shouldn't be resigning. If he didn't do these things, he shouldn't be resigning. And people have come up to me and said, well, you know, Sam, why? Okay, if he – all right, but didn't he apologize? Didn't he come out and say he, you know, he was really sorry and everything? The fact of the matter is I went back and I looked at what he had said, what he had written and done in the days and weeks following the allegations that came out. And it's interesting to me because Franken didn't come out and say, I did X, Y, and Z, and I am sorry, and that's it. You know what he said? It's classic psychobabble. He came and says, I feel bad for the experiences that these women have had and how they've perceived this, and gave these contorted, complicated explanations, if you could even call them that, of what it was that had happened. And I think, you know, as you, well, it's interesting because it wasn't an explicit apology. And the only thing to do here is if you get accused of something and you didn't do it, you've got to say, I didn't do it. That's it. You can't hem and haw about it. You can't be concerned with what the accuser feels. It's not about feelings. But this is the problem with liberals. They've always consumed themselves with feelings and perceptions and never about reality. All right, we got the news. Up next, reality. I promise you, that's what the news delivers here. John Wolfe, right up next, and I'm back after that. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio 790
KABC.
All right, here we go. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Bottom of the hour, 7:37. So now most media outlets are reporting that Doug Jones wins by a hair the Alabama Senate race. One observation about this. If it hadn't been the case before, I mean, how catastrophic has it been for Trump to put Jeff Sessions in as Attorney General? I mean, okay, so this is backtrack this, right? The reason that they – one of the most attractive things about Sessions coming in as Attorney General is that his seat, right, his Senate seat is in the easy win column for Republicans, right, given that he's in Alabama. They're not going to, you know, they're not going to put in a guy that's, you know, or someone that's from a contested area. It's not going to do it. House or the Senate. And then everything that has come from this, it's just a small aside, but every Jeff Sessions and his recusal and the appoint, you know, Rod Rosenstein coming in as interim AG and appointing, now sending out that now infamous memorandum appointing the special counsel, Robert Mueller. This, I'm telling you, there are people inside of the White House right now that are just kicking themselves because it's not – let me explain. It's not just a Trump decision, right? There's a team of people, many of whom are still in the administration now who are part of that decision-making process. So anyway, they have just got to be beside themselves because nothing but heartache has come from this. Now, I will – I always need time to digest some of these things. I am surprised. I thought it would be close, but it would go by a hair the other way. So we'll find out as we go through the data. The data will tell us kind of more of what has happened. But one of the things that will be very interesting to see here is what this does to Bannon's influence. Right? This was a race that Bannon had orchestrated, because you'll remember it was the incumbent Republican, the appointed Republican Luther Strange, who ran against Roy Moore in the primary and lost badly in spite of having Trump's endorsement. I have this interesting here. This was just earlier today, as it looked perhaps that Roy Moore was going to pull this off and Doug Jones would lose. CNN Anderson Cooper panel talking about the race and the state of the race. And this is what Bakari Sellers, who's a local politician, he's a former state legislator in South Carolina, and he's black, and he's explaining what in his view, right? And this is a liberal's view. What he thinks is this says about Trump and about Bannon and who they run. Listen to this.
I think that one of the things that Donald Trump and Steve Bannon showed today is they pushed the bounds of what white evangelicals would support. Mm-hmm. So now we know that white evangelicals, especially in the South, will support just about anything as long as there is a policy point, namely abortion, that you're sound on. I mean, they're willing to shy away and just turn a blind eye to, pedophilia or accusations thereof or sexual harassment or bigotry or xenophobia, whatever Roy Moore came with. They're willing to shy all of that away, and you can test the bounds, and this race tested the bounds of what white evangelicals, especially in the South, would vote for.
All right. Well, good. I'm glad that we're talking out against bigotry and racism and xenophobia at the same time. These evil, evil white evangelicals. The other point here that's important to note is that CNN, do you remember how upset – well, not upset, how gleeful they were when Trump endorsed Luther Strange and Luther Strange lost? Do you remember this? And what was the narrative there? Boy, Trump can't even get a Republican elected in Alabama. That's how unpopular he is. But you can't – so this wasn't necessarily Trump's candidate, right? I mean, anyway, just a small aside. But the bigger point here that I want to make is – testing the limits of white evangelicals. The Democrat that ran in this race was a Hillary Clinton Democrat. This wasn't a conservative Democrat. He won this race because Roy Moore is a loon, okay? On top of the allegations there, it's a loon. But he was the evangelicals care more. It's abortion, just one of the many things that they care about. And other conservatives in the state. I mean, this is, if you've got a guy that wants to raise taxes on job creators, wants to push and save Obamacare, wants to put limits on free speech to create hate speech exceptions to the First Amendment, and other issues. These are all important issues to voters. So this is more than just one touchstone issue. And I think that needs to, that needs to be said. They want to make it all about the touchstone issue. Evangelicals, they vote in a block and they will tell, they'll accept anything and everything. Clearly not. Clearly it wasn't enough to move the needle. Anyway, got to take a quick break. Sam Rogowski here, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Home of the smartest listeners in Southern California. Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski here for my friend, my attorney, sweet James Bergner. All right. What's going on in the holiday? Everybody's doing their shopping, right? It's less than 2 weeks to Christmas. The frantic rush is on. And believe it or not, now that more people are shopping online than in stores, but also more people are stuck in the car driving to work and driving places, right? So what are they doing? They're shopping in their cars. I've seen it with my own two eyes. Freshly LASIKed and better than 20/20 vision. I see people literally shopping on Amazon on their phones in traffic. So those people are dangerous. Can we agree on this? Fair enough. They're dangerous. And these are people that might just cause an accident. And if they do, don't talk to them. Don't deal with them. Don't deal with their insurance company. Call my friend, Sweet James Bergner. You want an attorney in your corner that's going to fight for you, that's going to take care of you, that's going to get the job done. All right? And getting the job done means getting you the justice that you deserve. He's easy to talk to. He's got a great team of people behind him. They're a great firm, great people, and they're honest, have integrity, and they will fight for you to the end. Easy phone number to remember, 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit the website, sweetjames.com. Hi, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Surprising win in Alabama for Democrat Doug Jones. Steve Bannon has egg on his face, a real big egg, a giant egg. It's like an ostrich egg all over his face. And I likely expect for his influence to wane. And the one takeaway from this race, for me at least, is that it's important who you run. The candidate himself or herself has got to be a reliably solid person. I can't be a wingnut. I was wondering as the returns were coming in, and I thought, and I was thinking about this Me Too campaign and that Politico piece I shared with you earlier that, you know, now even the liberals are starting to get worried. Hey, maybe this is going too far. You know, maybe we're, you know, writing people off and ruining their lives before we've given them any due process. It's some problem. Because look at poor Al Franken, such a champion of women, and yet, you know, he's on his way out. It just doesn't seem right. Anyway, against this backdrop, I wondered, God, what if Moore loses this thing? And then if we find out, I don't know, 3-4 weeks from now, a month from now, that, you know, maybe these particularly troubling allegations are complete hocus pocus. Somebody recants. We find a smoking gun. But I know it's a tempting thought, and it would be great, you know, a great example to really back up this idea that we've, you know, we can't ruin people with allegations alone. We can't just, you know, torpedo people's careers based on, it doesn't matter how many unproven allegations there are, you can't do it. But the bigger picture you've got, and I've mentioned this before, I thought he'd overcome it. Don't get me wrong. I'm surprised by the result. But the bigger issue here is that you've got to be disciplined. You've got to be focused. You have to be a laser beam when you're running in a major election, any election really. That is the one thing that when the media it continues to be so busy taking Trump apart and criticizing him for every shortcoming imaginable, you don't have to like Trump, but you've got to understand that Trump is a laser-guided missile. He's a workaholic. He doesn't sleep, right? That's part of the problem sometimes, you know, with those tweets. I wake up early too. But mind you, he's on the East Coast, but I wake up to 20, alerts of all the tweets that Trump has sent out. And they start coming sometimes in the middle of the night. Point being, the guy he's engrossed in his work and his mission 24/7. A guy like Jones wasn't. He just was wandering and undisciplined. And the only time that Trump really, looking back to 2016, that election, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a point in time when it got a little bit squirrely too. And that is what – oh, I'm sorry. I'm confusing. Moore's undisciplined. Moore. No, the Democrat Doug Jones was very disciplined. And he went through and he put in the sweat equity. You've got to show up. You've got to do the rallies. You've got to hit all of the places where you have any chance. And this is what happened to Hillary at the end of the day. I mean, the one very solid postmortem on the Hillary campaign And its failure is that there's lots of places she didn't show up. She thought she had it in the bag. And you don't do that. It's simply not good politics, not good practice, and not a good work ethic. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
Say, what is this? You know what it is. 790,
790. KABC.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KABC. So there is a ex-McConnell aide is thanking Bannon for showing us how to lose the reddest state in the union. Yeah. Well, they're going to – that's going to be a huge part of the story. Believe me, I'm telling you, McConnell and the rest of the establishment Senate Republicans are happy they lost a seat. They are more comfortable with a Hillary Clinton Democrat than they are with a pain in the money kind of wingnut but conservative, anti-establishment conservative Republican, right? That they would rather I promise you that tonight champagne corks are popping in Washington, D.C. And it's not with the Democrats. The Democrats are happy too, of course, don't get me wrong. But the Republicans here are most certainly feeling some degree of relief and glee. Well, and the reason is because a Roy Moore would have gone in there and been a tremendously disruptive force, which I promise you is why people voted for him. It's why he came within a percentage of winning a point with of winning this thing. He got 49% of the vote because people wanted him to go in there and be a disruptive force. So expect for there to be there. It's just a matter of influence. The threat now, Bannon doesn't have the same threat, right? If your promises that you're going to come into a race and upend it in the primaries, and you're going to primary all these establishment Republicans, and then your candidate that you put in there doesn't win the general election, you got a problem. You've got a problem. And it doesn't, you know, it just does nothing for credibility. And it probably means that people like Paul Ryan, for example, you know, there's a guy that's been going after him. What's his name? Nalen? It's been going after him for years, trying to unseat him in the primary. Paul Ryan being the Speaker of the House, deeply unpopular with the conservative base. You know, this is good news for him. It is because it puts fear in the hearts of more moderate Republicans that, hey, we take a chance on someone who's maybe politically more of what we want, but risks us losing seats, valuable seats that could then risk losing a majority in the House and or the Senate. Yeah, people aren't going to go for that. So party, you know, and that's it's it, and this election will help a lot of Republican incumbents breathe easy. They're relieved, I guarantee it. So the question, of course, there's a very good question about what does this mean for Trump, and there's a long answer. It's complicated, but there is an answer that can be given tonight. I'm going to get into that after the 8 o'clock news because I want to spend some time on that. You heard? Yeah, Jones rode in today to vote on a horse. Very dramatic. Moore, I'm sorry. Yeah, Moore. It's been a long day, folks. Moore ran in on a horse. He was with his wife. They rode in, the imagery of it was crazy too. I mean, that whole what a stunt. But now, I guess, what is it? Jones can say that, you know, he can say, you know, screw you and the road horse you rode in on, right? Is that the producer Robbie's being funny in there? All right. Well, this is gonna be talked about for the rest of the week. This is big news. And the Democrats are right to be excited about this. So in the breakdown right now in the Senate, just so you know, if this result holds, and I have no doubt to think that it will, 49 to 51%. So 51% Republican, 49 seats are Democrats. Very, very close. Because remember, you've got a couple of those Republicans who tend to vote with the Democrats, who are more liberal. So it's tight. It's not good for tax reform if it all goes back through into the Senate. This is every vote right now in the Senate mattered. So, all right, when we come back after the news, what does this mean for Trumpism, for Donald Trump, for the Make America Great agenda? I will bring you everything you need to know about that when we come back after the break.
Talk Radio, Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Here we go, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Now, we have left the Sweet James Studios deep behind the orange curtain and are actually in Culver City at the KABC studios tonight. So I am working here on borrowed equipment, and that's always fun because what they have here – well, I'm a Mac guy. I don't know if I've told you this before. I'm a devoted Apple person. And you put me on a PC, and I don't even this whole mouse thing here with the different buttons and the little wheel, the wheel. I don't know what to do with that. I've got the trackpad. You know, I'm used to that. The haptic touches. Anyway, I'm a closeted millennial, basically. Okay, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation. Here we go. The phone number, if you'd like to be on the program tonight, 800-222-5222. Sam@samnation.com is my email. I do check that during the course of the program. Big news. If you have been in hiding the last couple hours and are the least bit interested in politics, a Democrat, that's right, a Democrat has won the state of Alabama. And that is basically unheard of. I mean, you might as well have gone down there and caught a unicorn. So Doug Jones is now giving his victory speech. He's saying thank you to the crowd. I'm watching it live on CNN. All right. The thing that everybody is going to be talking about tomorrow, and you will be ahead of the eight ball because, you know, you're listening to me right now, is what does this mean for Trump? Right? Because whether you like Trump or you don't like him, you want to see him succeed, you want to see him fail, there are two separate issues that have to be taken separately. They both relate to Trump succeeding. One is Trump's reelection chances, and the other one being the Trump agenda. And I think there are two different issues that have to be addressed differently, separately. So let's start with Trump 2020. So the 2020 election, it's interesting because if you look at I was talking earlier about the betting odds, and as producer Robbie and I were reviewing these betting odds, one of the things that we noticed is that there's already betting odds going on 2020, and the interesting thing about it is it's got all the potential people that could possibly be in the race, and the betting odds right now. Was something like 20% for Trump, and then tiny, yeah, did he, yeah, okay, so, all right, doesn't matter. I don't need to know the exact one. But it was 20% for Trump, and then a bunch of others, came after that. And the interesting thing is that a significant percentage on there, something like 50%, think that Trump isn't going to finish his first term. That, to me, is the far crazier thing. So I'm going to tell you right now, against all betting odds, Trump is going to finish his first term. The only question here is he going to get reelected? And the conventional thinking here is that he needs to have a successful agenda, an accomplishment, a list of accomplishments, tax reform, legislative victories, we'll call it, anything that has gotten through the House and the Senate, become law, that he can call a win. Because that's part of the, you know, the conventional thinking, and that's part of what makes for a good resume if you're running for re-election. And I think that the trouble with this assumption is that it's not so much what you've done as what the perception is of what you've tried to do. And if the perception is, hear me out on this, if the perception is that Trump set out to accomplish all of the things that he promised, maybe didn't succeed in a number of them, but he tried. And it was the Democrats and the wishy-washy, you know, sort of Republicans in the, you know, that the establishment Republicans that stood in his way. Then he has someone to run against other than his opponent, which is critical. You've got to have somebody in a race. It's always important. If you've come up short in accomplishing what you've set out to accomplish, and the theory right now is, look, I mean, with the 51-49 split in the Senate, very difficult. It's going to be very difficult for Trump's agenda, his legislative agenda, to get through. But on the flip side of it, it may end up being something that helps him and that he uses to run against. I'm already in my kind of in my mind hearing the rallies that will be happening with increasing frequency as we get closer to 2020. And Trump will be out there and he'll be whoever the Democrat is, if it's, you know, Kamala Harris or whoever, he will be slamming that opponent for sure. But the real boogeyman in the room is going to be the do-nothing Congress. And Congress, the Senate, right, and the House, they will be they're going to be the no guys, right? They're going to be the party here. I don't mean political party, but they're going to be the player in this that is just saying, no, we don't want that. No, we're not going to do this. No, we're not going to do anything. And that's not a particularly popular place to be either. This is why you see, you know, you see President, even Bush, when his presidential approval rating was atrocious, Congress had a worse approval rating and a lower approval rating than Bush, because the perception was that they weren't really helping the crappy situation either. You're going to hear a lot of people tomorrow talking about how this is just a huge problem for Trump and that, you know, this is really going to stall his agenda. And all of that is true to the extent that maybe Trump doesn't accomplish everything that he sets out to do. But on the flip side of it, he'll have a greater boogeyman to run against. Trust me, 2020, Trump is running against Mitch McConnell as much as he is running against his own, you know, presidential opponent, whomever that is on the Democratic side. This is critical. By the way, let me illustrate it with this point. This is an important way of looking at it. Let's suppose that Trump had right now 51-49 Senate split. Let's say that he had a Democratic Senate let me put it this way. Let's say he's got a fully Republican Senate. I mean, we're talking like a supermajority, a 60-40 supermajority. And he's got the House, and everybody is Make America Great Again nonstop. Everything Trump wants, he gets. Now, let's say things don't work quite right. Let's say that in spite of getting everything that he wants, the economy peters out. There's a bit of a burst in the bubble. You know, the stock market adjusts. All these, you know, problems that will happen. Invariably, before 2020, there's going to be a market adjustment. This market cannot keep going up. We are for sure going to see some reality set in. And that reality, by the way, is going to set in sooner if the perception is out there that the markets have a perception that the tax reform isn't going to get done. If the regulatory environment isn't going to improve and so forth and so on. But beyond that, if bad things happen and Trump has everything that he wants and everything that and he gets everything that he wants, then it's all on him. One of the best things you have as a politician is to be able to run against Congress, as a president, to run against Congress. And I think that's going to be a big I'm telling you, this is how it's going to play out. So because of this, this Alabama seat is not necessarily may not turn into an enormous loss for Trump. On the flip side of it, he did go all in here in the general election for Roy Moore. There is probably going to be a little bit of fallout for him as it relates to that. And Democrats, of course, will be emboldened. But there's a risk there, too. What do I mean by that? Well, Jones is not just he's not a Southern Democrat. He's not a conservative Democrat. I mean, Jones is the acolyte of Hillary Clinton. He is a left winger. And Democrats, correct. Democrats are going to think that a leftist agenda works and succeeds, and they may feel emboldened to continue running very left wing candidates. When I don't think that's particularly the winning formula here. And it's the example here too is remember Trump is not when he ran in 2016 and still remains a relatively – you got to understand this. Like as a Republican, Trump is very moderate. I mean during the election, he actually spoke out for some abortion rights. I mean he did things in the Republican primary that were unheard of. He tacked to the left, in my view, toward common sense on social issues and then tacked right on economic policy, which is the winning formula, in my view, for succeeding in the political climate in this country. I think that's where most people are. I think if you poll the broad swath of Americans are more liberally more liberal socially and more conservative fiscally. So I think, you know, I think that that's going to play in here. So long and the short of it, what do we have? It's going to have an effect. You're going to have a Senate that, as far as the legislative agenda, is going to be more difficult, a more difficult environment for Trump. On the other hand, he's a wheeler and dealer. He's somebody we saw this when he submitted his plan. This wasn't like Obama. Remember when Obama would take things to the to Congress and he would say things like, this is how it's going to be, hell or high water. I want it this way and take it or leave it. He burned a lot of bridges even with his own party. But you couldn't criticize Obama because he was the anointed one. So you couldn't get out there and be too rough with him the way you can be rough with Trump. But Trump comes out there, says, this is what I want. This is what I see for my tax plan. This is what I want. Puts down a wish list and then is willing to wheel and deal on it. He's willing to step away from some of his positions. So who knows? He may end up wheeling and dealing and getting some Democrats on board while he's lost a Republican and has other Republicans who have fought him on his agenda. Yeah, I do. I think that's very much possible. But the Democrats, look, the Democrats can if they think that winning elections is going to be based off of late term abortions and taxing the hell out of everybody and transgender bathrooms and taking free speech and twisting it. The First Amendment, creating exceptions there for hate speech and that type of thing. It's a non-starter. It works in California. I know. It works in California. It works in New York. It works in a few places. But it's not going to tally up the votes in the Electoral College it's not going to create a win in 2020. It's not going to give them the White House. And everybody's going to be scratching their heads going, wow, I was shocked. I mean, how could it possibly be? We thought that 4 years of Trump was bad enough. How are we going to be facing eight? It's going to be precisely that. All right. Let's take a break. Can we take a break right now? Is that cool? All right. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. And we are live here 8:23 p.m. in Los Angeles. Very interesting. If you've taken an Uber or Lyft or any rideshare company like that, have you ever been surprised by how much it costs? So I would say a few times I've been actually surprised how little it costs. Like I'll take a ride and I'll go, that was $6 or whatever it was, and not a lot. There's a story Uber, I guess, surge pricing, that's where it can get really crazy, right? Because, you'll suddenly have multiples of what the base fare is. And there's a report that for some reason, there's some guy who took a 20-minute rush hour Uber ride in Toronto and was charged, you want to know how much? $14,400. Now, this is probably, this is in Canada. It's actually that, but that's U.S. dollars, right? So in Canadian dollars, it was, like $200,000. I don't know what the exchange rate is, but a ton of money. But what would you do? Call your credit card company and try to argue. I mean, I am fairly certain that Uber went to correct this quickly. But this is part of the, all of it is AI. You got to understand, there's not people setting these rates and setting these fares and going, what's fair and what's right. There's a computer system with a formula, right? That's what it is. It's figuring out supply and demand. And if you say, I really want this Uber, I've got to have this Uber, and there's no Ubers for miles, so it comes up with this price. And I don't know if they were on the screen. It's supposed to show you that it's supposed to show you what the price is supposed to be. It gives you an estimate, that. But I don't know if that's – maybe they don't have that in Canada. It's maybe something that our regulators require, but they don't have it on the app in Canada. Or the guy didn't look at it. Can you imagine that? Uber comes back and says, we showed you. You clicked OK. You accepted it. And by the way, that's a binding contract. If you've got a thing that pops up on your window – it doesn't matter. No. Legislation's evolved on this. It doesn't matter that you don't put a signature down. You don't iris scan. It's your phone. You ordered it. And they gave you the price and you accepted it. It's a binding contract. So this person is, I promise you, in a world of hurt, any normal person would be. You could take a helicopter for less. You literally could have – the guy could have taken a helicopter. Could have bought a helicopter for a few more dollars, I think. This is just – this is insane. It's – I'll tell you the worst part about the story is the PR angle, right? Because what's 14 grand to Uber? I mean, it's nothing, right? It's a multi-billion dollar company with huge revenues every year. It's not about that. It's that now everybody's talking about that guy. Did you hear about that guy? I was listening to Sam Nation. He stopped finally talking about politics and started talking about something interesting. And a guy spent 15 grand on an Uber ride. You believe that? And then the next time that you're there – by the way, do you have both apps? Most people, if you're smart, you know what you're doing. You've got Lyft and Uber. Let me tell you, if you do, you'll realize it's a quick lesson on how the marketplace works. Because you'll quickly realize that if you pull up Uber and go, ooh, that price, I don't like that price. That's not a good price. I'm not paying $14,400 for a 20-minute ride. And you open up your Lyft app and all of a sudden, you know, there it is. It's $27. And I've seen that. I've seen that happen. You get very different pricing. But not always. I'm not slamming Uber here. Sometimes Lyft is the one that's more. But they've got different modeling, and they've got different supply, right? And most of these drivers, you probably know this too, that most of these drivers do both. They're bi. You know, they've got their little pink mustache, but then they also do the little Uber thing on the sly. And I think that the rideshare companies discourage it, but anyway, it does happen. I'll tell you this right now. I'll tell you this is as a personal injury lawyer, I'm telling you this. And Sweet James would back me up on this 100%. If he were here, he'd tell you this. There are a ton of Uber, rideshare, Lyft, whatever it is, accidents out there all the time. People are – and do you know why I'm bringing it up to you? People are – How many people you know, maybe it's you, you get into the Uber and you're like, I'm in an Uber, so I'm not going to buckle up. How many people – do you do that? Honestly, you got to call me and give penance because you need to cut that out. You get in an Uber and you buckle up. And then the best part that people do, my favorite thing what people do in Ubers is they don't buckle up right away and then they're driving. And now it's weird, and they don't want to buckle up because now if you buckle up, it's like you're telling the driver that you think that he sucks at driving. So now it's like awkward thing. Do I buckle up? Buckle up. Just buckle up because you're not in some like magic protective bubble. And I can tell you a lot of accidents out there from people getting hit in Ubers. All right. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC. We got John Wolf up next with the news.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Fires everywhere, winding down. But the news, unfortunately, today again, 6 homes had burned here locally. It's a homeless guy cooking. I love, by the way, following the story here on my way up to the studios, and what did they say about it? So it was a guy in the camping. Oh, a guy in a camp. Okay, a guy in a camp. I don't think that this is a Boy Scout jamboree we're talking about. I'm pretty sure you mean homeless dude. And it's a bit of irony, of course, with the homeless guy starting a fire. Start with one homeless guy and then you end up with 8 people homeless. I don't know what the solution is. The homeless thing is out of control. I go to the courthouse in Orange County. I try not to go there, and I try to go from one side because in the center of the Civic Center there is probably one of the most disgusting displays of humanity I have ever seen in the Western world. No exaggeration, there's a homeless encampment inside the plaza of the Civic Center, which was designed to be this beautiful, open, public square. And the homeless have completely taken it over. You know, this has been in the news. But this is an area where, you know, it's not just, you know, we lawyers, we can deal with crap, okay? We can deal with it. But there's a hall of records across the way. There are young moms picking up birth certificates for their kids to get passports. There are young couples getting their marriage certificates. There are people that have to navigate this human zoo. It is literally a human zoo. There is fecal matter. I don't want to get too graphic. It's a family show. But I've been to all sorts of places in the world, and I will tell you right now. For example, you guys know I love Mexico City. This is 10 times worse than the worst of what I have seen in Mexico City. Okay, so to give you an idea. And it's all because our politicians lack any kind of will to do anything about it. You can't say, hey, move the homeless. Get them out of there. Because you know why? It's not politically correct. Oh, Sam, you can't do that. You can't. Where are your feelings? These people don't have homes. You rich, you're an evil rich white guy. You're right. So consequently, this paralysis, this political, like, deer in the headlights thing happens with the homeless. We can't do anything about them. And anytime you try to propose a solution, right, let's create a place for them over here. Well, NIMBY sets in. You guys know the political term NIMBY? Not in my backyard. I mean, gosh forbid, you create a homeless shelter over here. No, forget it, because everybody around that homeless shelter doesn't want it, or that proposed site doesn't want it. And so the place where the problem ends up getting tolerated eventually becomes a flashpoint for conflict and problems and disease. And, you know, the big hepatitis C outbreak that's going down in San Diego? I mean, this is not – it's a homeless thing. OK, it's not breaking out among, you know, hipsters. OK, it's not hipster hepatitis. It's homeless hepatitis. But it's again, politicians do not want to touch it. They don't want to get anywhere near it. And consequently, look at all these fires that have been started. Bel Air fire started with it was a cooking fire, a guy in the rough. Cooking a fire. So, you know, a little, I don't know what he was doing. Some reheating, some spam. Winds kick up, and next thing you know, billions of dollars in losses. And I think this is what so tremendously frustrates me about politicians is when you look at these homeowners, and I'm not just singling out, look, a lot of regular people have lost their homes too. Okay, but these are homeowners. It doesn't matter if it's a $5 million house or $500,000 condo. All of these people pay property taxes. They are the ones paying into the system. They are literally getting cleaned out by the state and by their local municipalities. You know what they deserve in return? It's a little bit of protection from that state that's robbing them every year. I'm just saying. I think it's a point that needs to be taken. All right, Sam Rogowski. Sam Nation live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio
790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski here for my friend, my lawyer, sweet James Bergner. This is the one and only person you need to call if you get in an accident, if you're injured, this holiday season especially. You know, you don't want to fuss with dealing with an injury of an insurance company on your own. Enjoy your time with family and friends. Enjoy the holidays. Do what you need to do and let James and his team take care of the rest. If you've been injured in a car accident, motorcycle accident, boat accident, had a dog bite you, a llama bite you, anything, give James a call. His phone number is really easy. Keep it in your hip pocket, 800-881-2021. All consultations are always free. There's no recovery, no fee. So it doesn't cost you anything until James gets you a settlement on your case. But just make sure that you give him a call. Don't go at it alone, folks. Trust me on this. 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit sweetjames.com. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Now, exactly what I was saying about this Alabama race earlier, Matt Drudge tweeted a little while back, Luther Strange, who was the guy who ran against Roy Moore in the Republican primary, lost. He was the establishment candidate, the appointed candidate by the governor who filled the seat temporarily. Luther Strange, this is what Matt Drudge writes, of the Drudge Report, right? Very savvy political guy. Luther Strange would have won in a landslide. Just too much crazy in nerve-wracking times. There is a limit. Now, this is exactly right. So really, if these allegations had all come out against Roy Moore, and Moore had addressed them in some kind of coherent, firm, absolute way, that'd be the end of it. I mean, it wouldn't be the end of it. I mean, of course, it would be pursued. And I'm not saying whether the allegations are true or not. I'm talking about the political response to it. What we got instead was this mishmash of crazy. It really was. And then you combine with that disappeared from the campaign trail for days and in one case almost a week. No, it doesn't work. Now I have a thought here. Wasn't Al Franken sacrificed essentially to get the Democrats ready to be in a position of, I don't know, moral authority when Roy Moore won the election and was going to be sworn in as a senator? And now the Democrats could get up there and say, we are the party of zero skeletons in the closet. We have taken care of even somebody who is as faithful of a servant to women's causes as is Al Franken, because there were allegations of sexual misconduct. Now he's gone. Well, Moore is gone for sure. Moore is done. Lost the race. And Franken is in this in-between place where, you know, he said, I'm leaving in the next few weeks since, you know, will announce my resignation at the appropriate time. What do you think? Do you think that maybe Franken will start to walk this back? Given that Moore, I mean, the entire purpose behind it, I promise you, the reason that all those spineless fellow senators of his got up and said, you got to go, was because they all wanted to, they got marching orders from the top. I guarantee it. And the marching orders were, we got to be ready for when the Republicans bring Roy Moore into this chamber. We're going to wrap this around the Republicans' necks and let them sink with this millstone. That didn't happen. Does it change any of it? There's been some reports that tomorrow the governor of Minnesota may be naming the successor to Franken, which is odd because, you know, Franken isn't even gone yet and they're already naming a successor. This is probably an effort to nudge Franken out. I promise you, I don't have any inside information. I'm just telling you right now, as we speak, with Doug Jones, the Democrat, winning the Senate seat, I believe that there is a frantic bunch of phone calls behind the scene between the Franken camp, the governor of Minnesota, and other leaders in the Democratic Party, and they are – Franken wants a way back out of this. He may actually fight. Trust me, that's going to be one consequence of what happened tonight. It's going to get a little bit messy for the Democrats who are hoping that Franken would just kind of slink off into the sunset. All right. Wow, fastest couple hours in radio. We're just plowing through. One more segment coming right up. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
Talk Radio 790
KABC.
Oh, this is too good. This is too good. You want to know what Hillary is saying about this Alabama race? Yeah, so look, if I was a denizen of the Democratic Party, which I am not, I would be doing everything in my power to get rid of this woman. All right, Sam Rzhovsky here, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KBC. Hillary Clinton said, tonight Alabama voters elected a senator who will make them proud. And if Democrats can win in Alabama, we can and must compete everywhere. Onward. You know, Hillary Clinton competed everywhere, didn't she? I mean, technically speaking, never mind she didn't show up in a number of states and campaign in a number of states that she ended up losing. She thought she had them in the bag. Anyway, it's just funny. Everybody is going to read in their own meaning of what this race is about. And honestly, I'm no different. You know, I'll have my take and it'll evolve. By the way, tomorrow night I'll be back and I will have I'll have given this even more thought over the course of the day. And we'll react to what's, you know, not only what's being said during the course of tomorrow, but also kind of give you some more finished thoughts. Because here I am, I'm reacting to this in real time and frankly surprised by the result. But look, it was close. It was a close race. And now as I look at the numbers, I see, you know, the write-in candidates, you know, may have cost him the election. You know, 1.6, 1.7% of the vote in a race that is within a percentage point. Those write-in votes were not votes that were lost by the Democrat, right? The Democrats voted for Jones. So those were protest votes of Republicans that did not vote for the candidate. So anyway, just to letting you know, I mean, that's a factor. But at the end of the day, as of right now, what I see in this is it's not the message, it's the candidate. You've got to run a candidate who's just can't be so far out there. And ultimately, isn't this kind of what in a little bit of a different way happened in the general election last time around? I mean, Hillary Clinton's policy positions, I don't think that they necessarily in and of themselves were losers completely. But at the end of the day, people didn't connect with her. They didn't like her. They didn't inspire anybody, get anybody excited. So candidates, you know, do matter. They are representatives of the cause and of the message. But I think this will be interesting to dissect in the coming days, and certainly will be heavily talked about. Okay. Yeah, so we're here. We're here at 7 tomorrow, right? 7 p.m. No kinks, so we're regular straight schedule. And yeah, we'll have plenty to talk about, no doubt. It'll be a big day tomorrow. Okay. Great to be here tonight. Happy to have seen all of you, and thank you guys, everybody here at KBC. You've been great. Thank you for having me here in the studios and putting up with me. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.